to the Oscars and the Australian production designer Fiona Crombie, who's worked on such films as Snowtown, Una and Macbeth, and also Jane Campion's TV series Top of the Lake. Well, now she's been nominated for her work on The Favourite, a Queen Anne period farce starring Olivia Colman, Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, which is currently in cinemas.
The Queen is an extraordinary person.
They were all staring, weren't they? I can tell even if I can't see, and I heard the word fat, fat, and ugly.
No one but me would dare, and I did not.
She's been stalked by tragedy.
Everyone leaves me. He dies.
And Fiona Crombie joins me now on the phone from London. Hi, Fiona. Welcome to The Screen Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, how do you find out that you're nominated for an Oscar? Do you find out like everyone else? You're watching the broadcast?
Yeah, live.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you remember where you were?
It was lunchtime. Yeah, I was here at home and it was lunchtime because they do it really early in LA and they try to get all the morning TV shows and things. So it was a really civilized time in London. And we were making lunch and we had it on in the background.
And are you given a heads up at all that you're possibly going to be nominated? I mean, do you get a sense that the studio is pushing in certain categories?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so there's, you know, things around it, like, you know, Q&As and press and things. And then you're on all these, like, you know, lists in magazines, you know, where they're predicting and all these kind of betting sites. And, you know, people start, like, fingers crossed and all this kind of stuff. And it does get under your skin a bit.
Kind of snowballs.
Yeah.
There's another Australian link on this film, of course. Tony McNamara is one of the writers on the script. He wrote the final version, also nominated for an Oscar, of course. Now, how did you get the job on The Favourite? Did this Australian connection have anything to do with it?
Well, no. I mean, it was completely by chance, which is even weirder because I've known Tony for years and I worked with him in theatre and he's married one of my best friends. So we are actual friends. And then I got the script completely separately. It didn't even have Tony's name on it. And I just knew that writing from having worked on his plays. So we could not believe our luck that we just wound up together on a set, you know, making this movie. And now we're doing all this together. It's really fun.
The film, of course, has the film that's resulted from the script directed by Yorgos Lanthimos is a film that's absurd. It's very expressionistic, at times even a bit surreal. It's funny and it's also cruel. Tell me about how all these sorts of things sort of affected your approach as a production designer. I mean, it's not a film that sits into a kind of more naturalistic period drama genre.
Yeah, and I think that was really, really clear to me from the very beginning because it was like it's written into the script. I mean, there are certain things that were embellished as time, you know, as we were rehearsing and, you know, the idea and certainly in pre-production. But it was clear from the outset that I shouldn't look at this just as a historical drama. You know, that was not what was being asked. And so for me, the challenge in many ways was kind of bridging a time in history, a real person, giving a sense, you know, like everybody wants a sense of the early 18th century. You want to place the film. But equally, like all of Yorgos's films, it's a constructed, capsule universe, if that makes sense. You know, like he always makes films that have their own logic and rules and effectively kind of a language. And I needed to create that within the 18th century, if that makes sense, you know, or they sort of walk together hand in hand in this film.
Was there a sense of, I mean, could you give me an example of any kind of internal rules that kind of made sense and helped make sense of this world for you?
One thing that I realized was that the best approach was to be quite simple and be concise about what we were doing. So, I mean, for example, we only used gold fabric, and that might seem like not that important, but actually it sort of stripped away and simplified the look of the film. So even though it's very ornate, it's not over the top. There's just something that's immediately stylized. And Sandy Powell did the same thing with the costumes. You know, all the costumes are black and white for the court. And it just immediately pushed the film out of naturalism. And I think things like that, they're not, I wouldn't say they're super subtle or anything, but they're just enough that they're just tipping the film away.
Which is interesting also as well, because it's a film very much about a lonely monarch in some way. So there's a somberness and a sadness despite all this extravagance.
Well, that's right. And I had a really strong feeling that it should never feel plush, like soft, you know, so the floors, we uncovered all the floors and we made sure that they were really shiny. And so there's a quite kind of a hardness, and you hear the footsteps and there's a real sense of rattling around the spaces. And we also didn't put too much furniture in. The rooms are quite empty. You know, there's scatterings of furniture, but they're not. It's not stuffed to within an inch of its life. You know, so we just did things like that that sort of underpinned those ideas.
Mm. And that emptiness, of course, also does give this suggestion of kind of, I don't know, bleakness or loneliness, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. And also the lenses, because the lenses are so, you know, all-encompassing. You see absolutely everything.
Yes.
With those lenses.
Well, at various points, they're just blatant fisheye lenses, aren't they? It's like you're looking through a fishbowl. Yeah. Tell me about the location. This is an actual location. Tell me the name of the place where most of the film was shot, and about the restrictions. I mean, were there a lot of restrictions that came with shooting in a heritage location like this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so we worked at a place called Hatfield House, and we basically scheduled the film around access there to some extent. You know, obviously the actor, availability as well, but the house became really important because that house is really accommodating and it's very, very well preserved. But also they do allow... we did construction in almost every room. We built walls and we built doorways and... You know, we built a whole room inside one of their rooms. And so we were there for some weeks just modifying and transforming the house, stripping out all their furniture. And they...
I can't believe they were so accommodating. When was it built?
Oh, it's... I have this usually written down somewhere. But it's Jacobean. So it predates our period. So Elizabeth First did apparently live there for a bit, but there's different sections to the property, so she wasn't in the part that we're in.
So it's 17th century, early 17th century.
Something like 1611.
But so they let you build.
Yeah, within there.
Wow.
Yeah. So for example, Sarah's bedroom, we built walls. Abigail's bedroom was a complete construction. Within a room that was empty. And then Anne's room, we built a wall section and obviously the secret passageway. And so we had people watching us all of the time, I mean, just constantly. You weren't technically meant to walk between rooms without an escort. But, you know, as time went by, we all had such an understanding. They were so, you know, they were just such a great bunch of people out there. And they were really... One of the complicated things was we also emptied everything. So having archivists and art handlers come in and remove all their pieces before we could bring in ours, it was just like a lot of coordination. It was quite slow work. Yeah.
And what sort of budget were you working with?
My budget was around £1.3 million. And the overall budget for the film is around £15 million. So it is a low-budget film. And we had to, you know, that's one of the reasons. I mean, Yorgos's preference is to work on location and to have, you know, that really grounds performance, and it really helps, you know, you feel like you've got these kind of, you start somewhere. But also, like, you know, just on a practical level with that budget, I'm not going to be building those rooms that we're working in. I mean,
no.
I can build parts of those rooms, but I'm certainly not able to build... you know, to that scale. So, yeah, we had to, the locations that we used had to go some way to telling our story, and then we brought it in. The other thing to mention is that Hatfield House is one of the only places that allows candles. And we used, as you saw in the film, like candles endlessly. The whole film is pretty much lit by candles.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of Barry Lyndon, Kubrick's great film, where he also used so many candles. Is that not a massive fire risk? I can't believe that you put candles in a 17th century, you know, heritage listed mansion.
Which, you know, the thing is, that we didn't really think about, which is really obvious. It's like, and this is actually true, we all forgot that ducks quack. Like, we were doing a scene with dialogue with a duck, and the duck started to quack, and we all looked at each other like, oh my gosh, of course ducks quack. We'd never thought about that. And then it's the same with the candles. It's like, it's actually burning the house down is obviously one aspect, but the other is wax. You know, you just produce so much wax. So what do you do about wax? We had to come up with all these kind of wax management plans.
Well, how many candles did you have in the largest sort of scene?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I really don't. I know that I asked my prop master how many he thought we burnt through the course of the film, and he said 80,000.
80,000 candles.
80,000. It was pallets, and we had two crew members full-time in a little tent cutting and prepping candles, because the thing is, no one can wait for candle replacement. You know, you're just on, go, go, go. So they had created all these, like, you know, sticks with, you know, like, tapers on the end, and like all these little ways of just quickly lighting candles and changing candles. Yeah.
It sounds like, if you do win, and I hope you do, all the best for the Oscars are at the end of February, but it sounds like a shout out to the candle riggers.
Yeah, the candle guys.
Is perhaps on the cards. But look, fascinating details, and it's a fascinating film. If people haven't caught up with it, they definitely should, and certainly your work is front and centre in it. The film is, of course, The Favourite, and I've been speaking to Fiona Crombie, production designer, who, along with set decorator Alice Felton, has been nominated in the Oscar category of Best Achievement in Production Design. Well, good luck. Thanks for talking to us on
Thank
The
you.
Screen Show.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.